Today we're going to hear from from the book of Mark, chapter 5. So thank you, Ben.
So, as Tracy says, Mark 5, verses 1 to 20, and that's on page 710. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed.
Thank you, Ben. If I could invite Ed to come up and share God's word with us today. Can we pray for you? Would that be okay? Heavenly Father, we just lift up Ed to you. We thank you for the man that you have made him to be and called him to be. And we just ask, Lord, that you just anoint him for what we need to hear, what you are saying to us for this time. So bless him, Lord. And we ask that you just bless his family and Ed back for the time that he's given to us. In your mighty name, amen. Amen. Perhaps I could just say by way of introduction, last summer we were, I particularly was sort of thinking about some of the commitments in my diary and what I felt God was calling me to lay down. And I shared with the deacons that actually I felt God was calling us into working in the city around homelessness. And we didn't know what that would be, but I just really felt strongly that that was what God was putting on our hearts. So we kind of explored and talked with our friends from the Recovery Cafe who deal with homeless people a lot, and many of them have been themselves homeless and living on the streets. We wanted to kind of learn a bit more, and it became really apparent, as we've already heard from Ed, that it's not just about putting a roof over their head. It's much more complex than that, and how we could do that. And there was nothing in the city that we could just look into straight away, that we could just get involved with and lend our support, that was putting that kind of holistic, complex solution together. And then I heard of another Baptist church, I'm sorry, I can't remember which one it is, that was working with Hope Into Action. You may know it, I can't remember, but it came in the Baptist Together magazine, and I was just kind of like, wow, that looks quite interesting. And we looked at it, we shared it with the leadership team, and we talked about it. Then Jane Muir from the Recovery Cafe and I had a Skype call with you, a conference call, didn't we? And we talked about it. And they've just opened up a house in Rowlands Castle for some Syrian refugees. And you were down this way, weren't you? So we said, well, let's get together and just see where the journey takes us. So that's kind of where we're at. And we were really excited on Thursday that we had a number of people across the city from different churches here. We also had at least three or four councillors here. One, the deputy council leader of the city, was here as well and has been really encouraging and offering support to us in taking this further. So it's an exciting time. So we're really pleased that you're here, and we're looking forward to hearing what you've got to say to us this morning. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you. We're just going to open up with a video or a film, if that's okay.
After 3.5 years working in Darfur, serving a refugee population, I found myself in a job in a place called Peterborough. And I asked myself, what on earth does a Christian do in Peterborough? Then one morning about 11 o'clock, I was playing with my daughter in a playground and began speaking to a man on the bench. His story is the same story you hear hundreds of times across this country every year. He left prison that morning, but he had nowhere to go and no one to go to. So spending the money he had from release, he was already through a bottle of something pretty strong. So I said to him, well, don't worry, I run 3 hostels. How can I help? Let me get you into one of them. None would take him. He was either too old or they don't take ex-offenders. So I tried Norwich. None would take him. As I left him there, I felt 2 things. One, very disempowered. But 2, I looked around and in my mind's eye, I saw 6 churches within 1 kilometre of our standing. And I thought, what is the point of all their worship or all their fasting? They can sing about the poor, they can read the Bible about the poor, but why aren't we doing anything about giving the homeless a home? And that's where Hope Into Action was begun. I'm Ed Walker from Hope Into Action.
Great. Well, it's great to be here. As I said, I didn't tell you all our connections with Portsmouth, because I thought it'd just embarrass further my children. But Rach grew up here. Her mother was born around these streets. Where? Copna, apparently. Okay, so Rach and I, when we were dating, we came and had some dates down here, which was great. We got married in Cowplain, if you know that, a free evangelical church there. We then came back from Khartoum to give birth. We lived in Lys, and Rach gave birth in Queen Mary's. St Mary's, near Fratton. So, and we come back here whenever we can. So it's great for us to be here. We love Portsmouth, and God loves Portsmouth, which is wonderful. So thank you for having us. It's really exciting. And just out of interest, how many were here? Was anyone here, apart from Tracy, here on Thursday night? A few people were here. Okay, great. Just in terms of what I'm going to do today, I'm going to go over a little bit about what Hope Into Action is. So that's the kind of pitch bit, or that's the explanation of, you know, what this charity is about. And then we're just going to go over Mark 5, the reading we've had, because sometimes people say to me, well, what would Jesus do about homelessness? So I say, well, we know what he'd do, because it's here in Mark 5. So we'll unpack that, and we'll try and understand that a bit better. And the context of all this, I guess, I mean, everywhere in the country is that homelessness is increasing. And I can't claim to know Portsmouth well, but one of the councillors on Thursday night did say, this project is needed nowhere more than in Portsmouth. Now, I'm not saying that's true, but it's an indicator that he, as a councillor, has a feel for the city, understands that this project would help. So a quick whistle-stop tour through Hope Into Action, and then we're going to get into the word, as it were. So just 7.5 years ago, as you heard, we opened our first house. It started when we did meet that guy on a bench outside a prison, and his deal was he had nowhere to go because he had no one to go to. So actually, if you think homelessness is about loneliness, really, because if you've got nowhere to go, you've got no one to go to. And if I came out of prison today, I have a mother, a father, a wife, friends that would take me in. If you come out of prison, or if you're homeless, your relationships have broken down in such a way you're facing extreme loneliness. Most of the time. And so that's the deal. That's where it started. Rachel and I also had an inheritance of 30 grand that we didn't tell anyone about. And so we thought, well, what can we do with this money? We bought the first house, and we partnered with my church, which is also a Baptist church. So that might be where you heard it from, actually. And we opened the first Hope Into Action house at that point in partnership with the Baptist church. And that church there agreed to provide love, support, and care to the first tenants. I went into prison. I met the first guy in the prison. I met him at the gate. I transported him to the house. And that was where Hope in Direction began. We also had a guy who'd been a heroin addict for 8 years. He'd been in hostel accommodation for a long period of time, and he came into that house. And that first house over the last 7.5 years has now grown, so we've now got 51 homes, each in partnership with the church, nearly 50 churches now across the country, housing people who are homeless. In Peterborough now, if you come out of prison or if you are homeless, there are 17 churches or 17 houses run by churches in this city just for the homeless. And they're just houses with two or three people in them, each one. They're not great big hostels, they are homes, they're in terraced accommodation, and we're trying to put them in community, we're trying to give them dignity, they're trying to be the kind of homes I'd be happy for my daughter to live in. And when they come into the home, they're given the key, they're given responsibility to look after the house, and they've got to sign up to building relationships with those people in church. Not in terms of they've got to come to faith, but saying actually, we would say to people early on, do you know what, we'd like to give you some real positive role models, some real positive influence in your lives. If you want that, you can have one of these homes. If they don't, that's fine. But if you do a lot of the studies, when people are homeless, or when people come out of prison, or when people, the first people that meet them are generally the drug dealer, or someone that wants to score off them in some way. So if we can replace those negative influences with positive ones, and the room, you know, across this room there are 40 people who are positive influences, and you could all have positive influence on the people of this, you know, who are homeless. What does homeless mean? We have a very broad definition. It includes refugees, but our main one is male single homeless. And then what happened is we went to a church and they said, we've got a real heart for women. Can we do anything for women? So we said, yeah, we'll open a house for women. And then we went for another church and they said, we'd really like a house for former sex workers. Can we do that? We said, yeah, we'll open a house for former sex workers. What about those coming out of rehab? Yeah, we'll do one for people coming out of rehab. What about those who've been in domestic violence? Yeah, we'll do that as well. So we've got, of our 50 houses, quite a range of people in them. And our definition of homelessness is very broad. It would include those, we often get emails from people who are living with a Hope man in a house and they say, I've got nowhere to go, I need to get out of this relationship. If you will take me now, I will leave my man. Until that point, I have to stay here in an abusive relationship. So those are that would be our definition of homelessness, very broad. Does that make sense? And that in a nutshell is us. I'll quickly take you through some PowerPoints so you get a feel for it. And the other thing is just to say, we'd love to partner with people in Portsmouth. That's what we have to do, and we'd love to, if the Lord is willing, we'd love to do it kind of in partnership with this church.
Sing a song.
You really don't want me to do that. I'm just trying to think what else I can tell you about. I've been doing action. I must know something else about. Okay.
Where does a lot of your funding come from to buy the houses?
Yeah, this is, with Rach and I, with that house we bought for the first house, we haven't given that money away. We've invested it into the house. So we actually still own that house. So actually, it's an investment. Does that make sense? Now, what we've done is if you look at the title deeds of that house, you'll find Hope. We'll find Rachel. My name is on the title deed, so I still own that house, but I've leased it to Hope Into Action. So Hope Into Action run it, and then what you're doing is you're getting on the house a good. They're putting homeless guys in it, so I'm getting a social return on my investment as well as a sound financial investment. And in so doing, what we're trying to do is sort of tap into this other seam of wealth that people aren't really using for the kingdom, because otherwise, our only other options, really, were just to put that money in a bank. Or stocks and shares or something. We're good to go. So that's Hope Into Action. That's our logo. If we click down, that's where we are now across the country. I've kind of already explained that. That's our definition of homelessness. Could people, those in recovery from addiction, former prisoners, homeless, people street sleeping, women fleeing domestic violence, refugees, and often they'll all overlap. Or could many of those overlap? Next one. That's our homeless guy, Isaiah 58. I quoted it in that film earlier. It was our favourite verse when we worked overseas in Darfur. Isn't this the kind of fasting I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, to set the oppressed free, .. to provide the poor wanderer with shelter. And that's the poor wanderer there. If you next click, using investment capital, we buy a house, which we try. Next click. That's our house. Nothing more than that. It's not bigger than that. It's just the kind of house that you and I might live in. It's in community. It's not amazingly plush. but it gives people dignity. And it says to the people in the houses, we think you have innate worth. We believe you are worth this home. So we have people sometimes come into our house, they see the quality of our fridges, and they'll be moved to tears sometimes. And the message we're saying is, you are worth it. And we trust you. We think you're responsible. And our belief system is that if you give someone, anyone, something they value, then they will look after it. So actually, if you look at our maintenance costs on our houses, they're relatively low compared to landlords. When I tell landlords what our maintenance costs are, £600 per annum on average per house, they say, well, that's incredible. And the theory is, we respect them, and so they respect us back. And that's our approach. We turn that house into a home. We've discussed that already. How do we do that? Click. By partnering with the church, because the church has got love, relationships, and can make that place feel like home. In practical ways, in decorating ways, but also in relational ways. Because again, remember, we believe the underlying cause of poverty is a relational poverty. We often deal with the symptoms of it, crime, drug addiction, abuse, whatever it may be, homelessness. But actually, the deeper need is a need to be loved and in relationship. Next click. That's the church. The church provides at least 5 to 10 people just to try and befriend and get round and love and support that person, all those people in the house. Because it's quite a technical area, we have a professional working alongside it, next click, that works in partnership with the church, and they will lead on things like tenancy law, house regulations, fire safety procedures, those kind of things that aren't necessarily the expertise of church. But no one prays better than church. No one does love and community and evangelism and discipleship better than church. And that's what we ask church to do. And that provides a... And so be confident, because you can sit here and think, we're an average small-time church. Look at that massive, great big charity over there. Trust me, a charity cannot provide what's sitting in this room. The social cohesion, the social capital that's sitting in here is I've worked in these charities. They can't compete with what you've got here. So have confidence that you really can add real value to the lives of the homeless in this city. Any questions? Making sense? Okay, next click down. These are our outcomes. We try and measure our outcomes every year. So 132 tenants in total, 87 of those that have been inside prison didn't reoffend, 92% of those that had a history of drugs improved it, 91% maintain the tenancy. Of course, that sounds great. It does mean 9% don't. So you've got to also remember that. That's quite difficult when they don't. And 49% improve their nuclear relations. We find that last one just happens organically. You know, if you've ever lived overseas, when you're overseas, you miss your family. You may fight with them all the time when you're here. But trust me, the second you get on a plane to live overseas, you miss them terribly. And it's the same for them. Many of them would have been estranged from their family for many years. When you give them a home where they've got a garden and they can actually invite them around a table, they'll often invite their mum, their dad, their brother, their sister, their son, their daughter around, and they can have the dignity of cooking for them. And that then brings them wholeness, a sense of shalom, a sense of who they are being put back together. And that would be holistic change. That would be our understanding of holistic change. If all those things, most people in this room, I imagine, can pay their bills, so you maintain your tenancy, you don't get kicked out by your mortgage company or you're a landlord. Most people in this room abstain enough from crime to be here this morning. Most people have managed to control your use of wine or other substances so you can stay sober most of the time. And your relationships are good, so you don't get kicked out of a job most of the time. And therefore, you're doing okay in society. Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions on any of that? That was a whistle-stop tour through Hope into Action. I think we're done there. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to go back into this story here about Jesus, and he met a homeless guy. And so we can really contextualize this. So imagine he lived on the Isle of Wight, and he comes to Portsmouth. That would work quite well, because just before he gets to Gerasenes, where he lands, he's over the other side, and he says this to his disciples. And I love these words. He says, let us go to the other side. Let us go to the other side. And then it says, full stop, then it says, leaving the crowds behind. And I think that so often explains the call of Christ. We get so comfortable in our routine, in our crowds, in the comfort of our church, in the comfort of these seats, in the comfort of our lifestyle. And when we hear Christ speak to us, he usually says, let's go to the other side. don't stay comfortable. And what is the other side? It can mean the other side of the world. It can mean the other side of society. It can even mean the other side of a political thought or a theological thought, just for a moment. Just pull down those walls. But let us not stay comfortable with where we are. Let's go to the other side. And if you're hearing God call you, it's often, if you know it's God, it's often taking you out of a comfort zone into something else that's uncomfortable. You're leaving behind the safety of the crowds. When you're doing that and you're a little bit scared, probably that is of God. I know there's this saying, there is no peace outside of God's will, and I get that, and that is very helpful. But there's so much biblical precedent of people, when God calls them, they get really scared. And it happened here as well, because what happened? They did everything right. They followed Jesus. They're in the Isle of Wight, remember, they're following Jesus. They're in Wight. They get into a boat, and then there's a great big storm. And these are experienced salesmen, but they start bricking themselves. They're terrified. But Jesus is still with them. And so very often you can be terrified, you're following God, you thought you're following God. Is it really God? Because now I'm in a great big storm and I'm terrified. This can't be of God because I should be experiencing peace now. No, you're still following God if you're scared. That's still what happens time and time again. Then they get to the other side, think, thank goodness for that, we're in Portsmouth, happy days. And then what happens? They meet someone, and again, it's another traumatic experience. 2,000 pigs die. This would have been traumatic. Highly traumatic. They'd have had a pretty scary engagement with this homeless guy. He had an evil spirit. There was something evil about him. And they would have been pretty scared. They'd have been hiding behind Jesus' cloak and come on, let's jump back in the boat. I'd rather the storm. So it's just about understanding what the call of Christ looks like. It doesn't always mean it's easy following Jesus. It doesn't mean it's untraumatic. And we're only in the fifth chapter of Mark here. So they haven't had 30 years of being a Christian or 20 years. They've just had a few months of following this guy. And Jesus doesn't kind of wait around. You don't need to be the expert yet. He does his training on the job. In fact, that's the best way to learn about Jesus, is to get out of your comfort crowd, get into the boat, go to the other side, start engaging with someone, be totally out of your depth. And guess what? You'll find yourself praying far harder than you have done for quite a few months yet. Does that make sense? So don't feel you've got to be qualified. The best place to do your teaching is on the job. So they get out the boat. Then they meet this man. I'm just going to do a quick risk assessment. That's a term we use a lot now in the kind of voluntary sector. Well, just in UK life, isn't it? We have to risk assess everything. So this is one I would tell you now who wouldn't make it into most homeless hostels or houses. And the people in Gerasenes, they'd made a pretty rational choice of how to deal with him. Let's not blame them. We would probably have made the same. Let's have a look at him. He had an evil spirit. Now, what does that mean? It could mean multiple levels. But sometimes you do just meet people and you just think, man, he doesn't seem so much fun. He feels a bit difficult. And you can sense it at the point you meet him. And clearly, these guys did that also. He lived in the tombs amongst, you know, where people bury your dead. So he's homeless. He's street homeless. He's a rough sleeper. He's not doing very well. No one can bind him anymore, not even with a chain. They tried to chain him. They had tried to put him in prison, and he'd escaped. So he's a multiple offender. He might call him a prolific offender in our culture. He'd often been chained. Yeah, so he's a multiple offender, prolific offender we'd use, but he tore the chains apart. He's strong. This guy's got muscles to die for. He is a big lad. And that also adds to his physical sort of presence and the fact we're a bit scared of him. And he's self-harmed. He cut himself with stones. So a lot of the symptoms we might see out and about at night on Portsmouth. But the other thing he says, he would cry out night and day amongst the tombs and in the hills. He would cry out. Something desperately sad about that, actually, isn't there? There's something, he's crying out. Why is he crying out? He's lonely. He's in despair. He's not, you know, beneath the front. There's almost always a very soft centre and someone that is crying out. But it comes out in different ways. It comes out in attention. It comes out in lots and lots of ways. Violence, negative behaviours. But inside, they are just crying out. And we would say they're crying out for relational love. You know, and the first commandment God said was, it's not good for man to be alone. And this man was clearly alone. There are three ways Jesus said you can meet me. One was when two or three are gathered together, church. Two was when you have communion. You know, I'm there in the bread and wine or whatever. And the third way is when you hang out with the those who are rejected by society, those who are poor, those who are in prison, those who are in hospital, those who are sick. That's the third place you're almost guaranteed to see Jesus turning up. And therefore, it's all of three of those are relational, if you think about it. So Jesus is a relational God. He says you find him in relationship. When we share communion, you have to do that with someone else. When you pray with someone, as we've done, Jesus was there. But also when we get out of our comfort of our crowds and meet people on the edge of society and genuinely engage with them, you'll find almost certainly your spirit will somehow mysteriously lift. It's a strange experience. When you sit down, you genuinely engage with someone who's been rejected by society, often something strange happens to you. You come away just sort of feeling a bit, you know, lighter in your spirit or inspired. You've got some drive. Maybe your love has expanded or something like that. And what's happened is, in a spiritual term, you've met Jesus because he's there. And it shouldn't surprise you. You may not recognize him, but you have met Jesus in some way, shape or form. So that's what we'd encourage people to do. You know, you can flick someone a coin and disappear. Actually, maybe you're robbing him of his dignity and you're just pleasing your own conscience. Or you can stop, you can engage with him, and then you think, well, what do I say to him? Well, what did Jesus say? He said, what is your name? What is your name? It's small talk, but it's a really good place to start. There are loads of homeless people in Peterborough that we can't house. And every now and then, most of the time, to be honest with you, I preach and I sound great. Most of the time, I'm so busy helping the poor, I don't have time for the poor. That's often the case. Every now and then, I stop on my lunch break and I'll stop and I'll just have a chat, maybe buy them a sandwich and then eat a sandwich with them. And I might start with, what's your name? When you do that, they give you a name back. And you're now interacting with a person who's got a name rather than the homeless guy who's without. And then you start entering into a story. And you start asking some, they might ask you your name, and you can say, my name's Ed. I'm posh. I can't help it. That's who I am. Don't try and be who you aren't, but just be yourself and have a chat. And you never know, they might tell you your story. Very often when you engage with people, as I've said before, there is like an emotional transaction that happens or a spiritual transaction that happens. And what's happening is rather than seeing this bloke who's homeless and pathetic and can't do this, can't do that, and, you know, he smells a bit and he's probably smoking some cannabis and we've judged him for that and all these sort of things, actually we hear his story and we are moved by compassion. And this judgmental attitude that we've probably all got, certainly I have, gets replaced by a sense of a greater humanity, a greater sense of love, and a sense of, do you know what, that could be me, and a drive to do something about it. So that's where I'd start. I'd sit down and say, what's your name? The other thing that Jesus didn't do, he worked out what was wrong with him. Now in Luke 4, when Jesus started his ministry, he said, look, I have come here to release the oppressed, to set the captives free, for the recovery of the sight of the blind, and to proclaim the good news. So you've got a totally old sense of holistic mission here, but his main sense is that I've come here to release the oppressed. What he didn't say he'd come to do, he didn't say, I've come to give things to poor people. I haven't come to give someone a sleeping bag and then go back. Though it's really good to give people sleeping bags. He didn't say, I've come to give someone food and then I'm going to go back to my crowd, jump on the boat. Though it's really good to give people food, and Jesus gave people food. What he did is he was with that person and he worked out what's oppressing him. What is oppressing him? So what's oppressing someone that's on the streets? It may be a lack of relationships. It might be poor education. It might be poor drug intake. It may be debts. It may be a history of crime that means he can't get a job. Maybe the fact he hasn't got a house, so no one will get him pay his benefits to anywhere. All those things oppress him. What happens often is we lineate them. So someone from a debt agency comes along and says, okay, what you need is to be free from debt. Someone from the council says, well, you need a home. An evangelist comes along and says, you need Jesus. Someone from the drug agency, you need to get off drugs. Well, you're only dealing with one of the issues. Actually, all those things collectively are oppressing them. So collectively, what we need to do is address all those things that release them, and then you'll see someone flourish. Does that make sense? And so at Hope Into Action, we try and take someone into the home, we try and assess all the stuff that's going on with him, and then say, let's work with you on all of those things over time. Where do you want to start? Does that make sense? And slowly. Now, I'm so jealous of Jesus because he manages to do it in 20 minutes. So, you know, think 20 months, okay? Don't think anything less, really. Oh, that's often how long it takes to work with these kind of people. And that's a different, that's a hard call to follow, because, you know, you go to New Wine, and I'm going to New, I hope I go to New Wine, I'd love to see you there, and, you know, there's always someone up front who had been in the Gerasenes, and they go, I was in addiction, or I was in prison, and now look at me now, and you go, isn't that amazing what God's done? And what we've done is it is amazing, and God has done amazing stuff. But in that 2 minutes that they get to speak, they airbrush out the 3 years of hard discipleship that some bloke has put into them, and lots of grace on the process. And let me tell you that there's 3 hard years that someone has put into that, and they've picked up a few scars in the interim as well. And that's part of the call of Christ. The other thing, just to say, he did all this for one person. All this, he took 12 of his disciples just to help one person. And then he went back again, left him there. So, do you know what I mean? It's a lot of work to transform one person's life sometimes. But that's what Jesus did. He did all this for one person. So, just to recap as to where we are. The call of Christ is often to leave the comfort of the crowds. Number two, don't expect it to be easy. Don't expect following Jesus to be easy. Three, have a mindset that you're there to release the oppressed, as part of which will be giving things to them. But it's a mindset of how do you release the oppressed. And the other point on that is Jesus didn't water down, in those 56 words in Luke 4, he 3 times said he's there to proclaim the good news. So we don't want to lose that at all. As an organisation, we believe in spiritual power. We believe in that God can do great healings miraculously. We believe in words of knowledge and everything else. And appropriately, without abusing the person, we want to, that's fair game. We live in a free country. We can still talk about Jesus if we want to. That's part of holistic outreach. And the other thing, and then we come to the next thing here. So how did Jesus release him from the oppressed? And this is pretty amazing what Jesus does now. Because you've got a man that no one likes. Right? I mean, if they tried to like him, they've discarded. He's just too difficult to handle. And he's been ostracized by the entire community. So he's not, you know, he's not going to be Barack Obama in 10 years' time. He's not worth investing in, really. There he is rejected. How did Jesus transform him? What did Jesus use to transform him? 2,000 pigs. Now look, that sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? I don't know how much you know about the cost of pigs these days, but I had to look up the cost of pigs recently, and here we are, a Welsh boar pig, a Welsh boar, I think that's right, will cost you, if you were buying it in the market, cost you £250, £250. So, £250 times 2,000 equals £500,000. Now, these pigs weren't just kind of like wild, you know, these were valuable assets for the people there. These were community assets that were traded and, you know, used for their, all the, you know, pigs and bacon, all that kind of stuff. So these were really valuable to the community. This is the livelihoods of those people in the Gerasenes. And Jesus didn't hesitate to use up £500,000 worth of assets in order to transform one person's life. So this is the love he has for this person. It's incredible. Now, if someone were to come to me and go, do you know what? Here's £30. I'll take you out for a meal and just, you know, just go and have a meal for £30 on me. I'd think, no. I'd probably say yes. But do you know what I mean? There's a part of me inside of me that thinks, I'm not worth it. Yeah, that's so kind. You know, I don't really think I'm worth that. If someone say, here's £500,000 I've just taken from the local community to transform your life because you are worth it, that is a radical sense of my worth. He thinks I am worth something amazing. Well, flip an egg. I mean, that's a lot of... Jesus really loves this guy, doesn't he? He really values him. And as we become more like Jesus, we understand the value of every human being, our brother and sister, as equal to ourselves, no more, no less. And no matter how many good works, no matter how long you've been coming to this church, no matter how many prayers you've done, it doesn't make you any more worth. You don't have any higher worth in the eyes of God than this guy here. Not at all. And you see that played out time again in the Gospels. This guy, no matter how bad he's been, doesn't make him any worth any less than he was when he was born. He still has innate worth. And that is so valuable to God that he'd happily write off £500,000 for him like that in a flash. to transform his life. That is a radical, crazy love. Even if this stuff is made up as a parable, as a story, which it wasn't. I don't think it was. I believe it happened just like this. Even if it was, it's so wild in terms of extravagance for the love for this person that it would blow your mind. That's the Jesus we follow. And as we become like him, we'll never get to... That's how much we will value those guys on the streets in Portsmouth, which is a real challenge, right? But if we want to be like Jesus and have the love of Jesus and see through the lens of Jesus, we'd say, that's how much you're worth. Which is interesting, because at Hope Interaction, we buy houses at £150,000, and so we get two people in them. So we are undercutting Jesus by at least 20%. If anyone's got any money lying around, we'd love to have a chat and see if you can invest it in a house for the homeless. Okay, we're coming to the end now. Just a few other points just to quickly rattle out. Interesting, the people said, will you leave? And Jesus, being a gentleman, says, yes, I'll leave. But he didn't really leave because he let the, you know. So maybe you think you've been trying to reject Jesus all your life. In reality, he's still there, because actually he stayed there through the testimony of this man. So if anyone thinks you've been trying to reject Jesus for a bit, you're here for a reason. He's still alive. He's still on your case. Get to know him. And the other thing, the demon-possessed man says, can I go with you? And Jesus said, no. So Jesus doesn't always answer your prayers. But this is my final point. I'll just recap on the first few points I've done. The call of Christ is often out of the comfort of where you sit. Don't expect it to be easy. Have a mindset of releasing the oppressed. How much does it really mean to you? How much are you prepared to sacrifice? Given that Jesus was prepared to sacrifice £500,000 worth of assets. And the final one is this. It's really interesting. How do you release someone from poverty? Because this guy, he was still being a vulnerable adult. He still has some issues to work through. And he says to Jesus, can I go with you? Now, if that had been me, if I'd been Jesus, I'd go, yeah, come with me, because that's really sensible. Because actually, be surrounded by my best men, we can look after you, we can disciple you. I can also show you off and get some glory about how good I've done a job here, all that kind of stuff. He says, no, stay where you are. And he gives him responsibility. He says to him this, he says, go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So what he does, he gives this guy responsibility. So he lifts him out of poverty, not by giving things to him, but by giving him responsibility. Does that make sense? So it's right to give stuff to people in its context, but eventually we've got to say, do you know what, I trust you with something really important, and that, in this case, was the gospel. And think back over your lives, how you've developed. You know, at one stage your mother had to wipe your bum for you. At one stage, you know, she had to feed you. And eventually you've grown and grown and grown. If you've been promoted at work, if any of you have been lucky enough, someone has then said, I believe in you enough to give you more responsibility. And often you're not really ready for that. And you step into that and suddenly you man up, or woman up at that stage. Does that make sense? And that is how we lift people out of poverty. You can't keep them there forever. You've got to eventually lift them out of poverty by giving them responsibility. He also surrounded them by his community. And that's what we can be. He embedded people in relationships, which comes back to the point, we all need relationships. Relationships keep us strong. Analyze your life. If it wasn't for my wife, if it wasn't for my children, if it wasn't for the people I meet every day at work, if it wasn't for my family, if it wasn't for my friends, the people I play sport with, all those things keep me together. Does that make sense? They help prevent, you know, they'll help keep my mental health strong. Without any of that, I tell you what, my mental health would have deteriorated a long time ago, far worse than it has already. People need relationship, and trust in the relationship capital you have. Trust in the what's sitting here in this room. It is really, really valuable. And that's it. I'm going to go over these 5 points, and we're going to end on a film, and then I'll hand over. So the 5 points were, have you heard the call of Christ to go to the other side? Don't expect it to be easy if you have. Have a mindset of releasing people from oppression rather than just giving things to poor people. Are you really prepared to sacrifice, you know, £500,000 worth of assets? Give people responsibility and give people relationships. Thank you very much.
With us today. Ed's going to be around over teas and coffee if you want to ask him specifically any more questions. What I would like to say to you as our wider sort of church family is Is this calling on your heart? Is there something that you want to do? This is a question about, are you willing to support people who are housed? That's the question that we're asking you. If you've got money, then that's a separate conversation. If you want to help put some money together to get a house together, that's a separate question. What we as a church are doing, and I guess as the minister, what I'm calling you to, are you prepared to love someone, one or two people, in the way you love each other and the way that you've shown love to me and Steve? Because that's what we're asking you to do. Are you willing to be the church and come alongside and love people? That's what we're asking. Ed assures me, the money will come, don't worry about it. I feel passionately, I know the rest of the church leaders feel really passionately, this is what God is calling us into. So we invite you to do that journey with us. Shall we pray? And we will sing again.